at the sound of the funky tone. It will be 14 days until hope, change, and my glistening pecs come to the White House. See you on Inauguration Day.
For the most entertaining talk anywhere, stay tuned to LA Talk Radio. Your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Hello, I'm Stuart Smalley. Or should I say, Minnesota Senator Stuart Smalley. Yes, it looks like I won the election. And that's okay, because I wanted to win, despite what my rageaholic mother would say about me being selfish. Well, before I take the oath of office, I need to look in the mirror and take an oath to myself. I, Stuart Smalley, swear to faithfully discharge the office of senator because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. At least 225 more than those that hated me. Thank you.
A man dismembered after dying on a dominatrix's torture rack would have wanted it that way. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Daryl Rogers was dismembered last week after suffering a fatal stroke while chained to a torture rack. Today, friends of the late submissive say he wouldn't have wanted to go out any other way. The deviant's longtime co-worker Alex Tully assured reporters that Rogers would have appreciated being cut into several pieces with an electric steak knife, then stuffed into a neoprene bag.
Daryl just really craved humiliation. I really hope that, you know, they had the decency to spit in the bag before they buried it.
Rogers' family plans to respect his final wishes and spread his partially decomposed remains on a lacrosse field where women with spiked shoes can step on him until the end of time. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This station presents Real American Heroes. Today we salute you, Mr. Taking Down Christmas Decorations Procrastinator.
Taking Down Christmas Decorations Procrastinator.
It took you hours to put them up on a bitterly cold December day. They are your holiday lights, and you'll be damned if you're going to take them down one day too soon.
Do you believe June is too soon?
You, Mr. Taking Down Christmas Decorations Procrastinator, would like us to think that you have the Christmas spirit all year round. But your neighbors know better.
They think you are a lazy bum.
Those reindeer won't put themselves away.
Rudolph's covered with fur crap, yeah.
So when you're packing the car for summer vacation and look at the house with light strands sagging from the gutters and a deflated Santa in the yard, shake your head in disbelief for Mr. Taking Down Christmas Decorations Procrastinator, a real American hero. Wouldn't it be awesome if icicle lights just melted?
And now, from high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, January 6, 2009, of course. And this morning it's Sam and Linda rather
Hi,
than
Sam.
Sam and Susie. Of course, Susie is in Australia and hopefully she'll call in again today. And we have Linda Gildersleeve, Gildersleeve.
Right.
I love this name. I really do. If I could only say it.
I could have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. And Linda, you were on the show a couple weeks ago, right?
That's
as a
right.
guest and stuff, and we really liked you here, so invited you back. So thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
You made a long drive to come in here.
Yeah,
this
I know.
Morning.
I got up at 4, but that's okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, we must be important to you.
You are.
So how have you been? How was the holidays?
I've been good? Great. Been yeah. great. As I emailed to you, I got in touch with my son again, and he called the other day from Sutterville.
Where's Sutterville?
It's in between Sacramento and Lake Tahoe.
Oh.
I looked on the map. It's about a half hour outside of Sacramento.
Really?
Yeah.
And when was the last time you saw him before?
I hadn't seen him for about 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We were estranged.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, we won't go there.
We won't go there. But we're back together.
Really? That's fine.
And I have a little baby granddaughter.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that
cool.
That must have made your day, at least.
Oh, it did. I saw her pictures on MySpace. His wife put the pictures up there. Uh-huh. She looks just like my son did when he was little.
Really?
When he was born.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you guys hook up again?
I put my picture on MySpace and was kind of hoping in the back of my mind that he would call me. And sure enough, he did. Yeah, and I just put that up like in August of this year. So his wife spotted my picture, and our last names are the same now.
Yeah.
Not the Gildersleeve, but my ex-married name. And she... contacted me, so it's so cool.
Well, that's awesome.
I know.
So that changes your life pretty much, right?
Well, I can sleep at night now. I'm not worried about what happened to him and, is he okay? Is he alive?
Yeah. Is that your only child?
Yeah.
Really?
It's my baby.
Cool, yeah. I mean, that's sad when you don't talk to them for a long time. But you know what? I mean, my daughter's 18 now. And I barely see her, Thank goodness today I managed to make a date with her. So after the show, I'm going to go.
Daddy date,
yes. And we're going to go have lunch or something.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, I have to make an appointment with her.
Oh, yeah. I assume she's not living close by?
Well, she goes to college, but now she's on vacation for a month. I barely see her. So we'll see. We have an author that wrote a book about teenagers and adolescents, and that's going to be awesome. We're going to talk to them in a little bit.
Awesome.
And a book called Sparks. And that covers teenagers and how to bring out the best in them. And I thought it was a very interesting book. So we're going to talk to them about it.
Oh, great.
Now, just to remind our listeners or to those who don't know, Linda, you used to be in adult films.
Right.
How long ago was that? We don't have to hide ages here,
No, we don't. It's about 30 years ago.
30 years ago. So that was like
it sounds so long.
It really does,
And it doesn't feel like that long. It feels like yesterday.
I know.
It really does.
I know.
In my head, I'm still 19.
Aren't we all,
Sure.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, I'm freaking 48 years old, It's not the same anymore.
I know.
It's
the body
like
just doesn't move the same way, right?
Yeah. So we're not going to go over it all over again. People can,
thank God.
Can find it on the archives and stuff.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say that you were there like in the golden age of porn, pretty much, with Ron Jeremy.
Years.
And Nina Hartley and all these people, right?
And you know what? I was going to let you know, but it's been so busy with the holidays, but I knew Al Goldstein in New York when I lived there. He went to school with a boyfriend of mine.
Really?
Yeah. And
you
I
did
looked,
mention it when you were
oh,
here.
I did.
Yeah, from Screw Magazine, right?
Right. And I looked him up on the internet, and he's like working in a deli for $10 an
Are
hour.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Wow, what happened there?
He lost everything.
Really?
When I knew him, he had about 12 psychiatrists. I mean, he was really whacked out.
Really?
But I mean, it kind of boosted him into his reality and made him famous, but it didn't work out too good.
Yeah, he had a lot of money at one time.
He sure did, A lot of wives and kids.
Really?
over and over and over. I think that's what happened. Yeah,
that's pretty crazy. I don't see why people get married and then just give up
half of it. Give it all away.
It's
I'm
crazy.
On the guy's side. I don't understand... Women staying at home and living off their ex-husbands, that's so cold.
Yeah. I know. And then they get all this money just so they don't have to change their lifestyle.
Yeah.
For crying
out
loud.
Those are my neighbors.
I know. It's like, I need $50,000 a month. I can't live below that.
Yeah, I can't make it without that. It's like, did you ever think to get a job?
there you go,
That's that's most of Orange County.
Really?
A lot of drama, too. Because they have nothing better to do.
That's true. So how did you wind up in Orange County?
Let me think for a minute here. I was pregnant when I lived in Los Angeles with my second husband. Mm-hmm. And after we got divorced, I moved to Orange County just to have a nicer environment for my son.
Oh.
I didn't want him to go to L.A. schools. And
So he grew
up,
I don't blame you.
Yeah. He grew up in Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
So he's a little surfer guy.
Surf city.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
That's cool. So, I mean, there's great things about Orange County and stuff, but it's kind of out there, right? I mean, it's far.
It is. And it's just so conservative. And you know, I live in Corona del Mar, which is a little area right outside of Newport, a little bit south of Newport, going toward in between Newport and Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
And it is beautiful, but at the same time, there's nothing open after about 9 o'clock at night. You get the munchies, forget it.
Yeah, that's Southern California for you. Even in L.A., you know, I mean, there's not that many places that are open late, you know?
Yeah.
And that makes L.A. feel like a cemetery sometimes, you know? If you go to New York City and stuff, you realize how sleepy L.A. is.
I lived in New York before I lived here for a couple of years, so I know. Yeah, it was really boring when I moved here. I moved here basically because my mom was here and I broke up with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had nothing better to do. I'm like, just come out here, you know?
You know, and you'd expect in a city with Hollywood and stuff in there to be happening, you know?
Yeah.
To be rocking all night.
Yeah.
But nothing.
I know. You know. Particularly on Sundays, I've come through L.A. and gone up on the Strip, and there's nothing happening. I mean, it's not a daytime city.
No, no.
It's
you
dead.
You mean not a nighttime city. I know. It's amazing. So, so Susie's going to be away. Oops, excuse me.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes it happens. So, Susie's going to be away for a couple more weeks.
Wow.
And apparently she was hoping to couch surf. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what she was hoping. And now she's putting ads on Facebook and calls in and she says, I hate couch surfing.
Oh.
So, and I can't imagine how much she's done already.
I know.
But, So, I don't know. But she seems to find places to be and people to buy her drinks all the time.
So. She's got that personality.
Yeah,
you know?
She does.
Yeah. You can't help but like her, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like,
cute.
Let me cuddle with you. I'll buy you whatever you want, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how she goes through life. Successfully.
Whatever works, right?
Exactly.
That used to work for me too.
Yeah.
I'm like, why don't they buy me drinks anymore?
You're not 22 anymore.
That's right.
Yeah. I know, it changes, you
it
know.
Hurts.
I think age, you know, it's like we try to ignore it,
right?
But once we start thinking about it, it's kind of scary.
It is.
You know, it's
like,
kind of scary.
Next?
You figure, you know, what do I have, 20, 30 years to live, you know?
I start thinking that. Yeah, because a lot of my friends are dead.
Really?
I swear,
oh, my
they
God.
Are. They were friends that were a little bit older than myself, maybe by 10 years, but that's not much, you know? They're gone.
True. Really?
Love you guys.
Well, hopefully you won't be joining them
soon. I know. So it does make you think, like, well, you know, what's going to become of me?
Yeah.
And how long do I have left?
Yeah.
And what do I do with that time? So I really live every day to the fullest.
Well, that's cool.
I
that's
do,
the way to do it.
Because you,
know?
You never know.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes us many years to arrive at that point.
That's right.
To say, yeah, I should just live one day at a time and really enjoy it. You know.
Yeah. AA has something there, don't they?
I believe, yes. So anyway, since you were here, I suggested you take a radio show with us.
Yeah.
And you jumped on the opportunity.
I jumped on it.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. What do you have planned? What's it going to be called? When are you starting? I don't even remember.
I know. There's been a lot of changes going on. I'm using my maiden name and my birth name, which is Gildersleeve.
Right.
And so the show is going to be called The Greatest Gildersleeve.
Oh.
And
how
thought
did you
I'd,
get at that?
Well, I thought I'd play on that because I've heard years ago that there was a radio show called The Great Gildersleeve back before our time.
Like The Great Houdini or
That's
something?
That's right. I think they were in the late 30s all the way up into the 50s, like right before I was born, which was 1956.
Yeah.
And, so I thought, well, you know, what a great name to have for radio.
Right.
And I always kept that name when I was doing acting. I had my SAG card and all that. And everybody, oh, The Great Gildersleeve. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I was young. I'm like, I wasn't sure who that was, but now I know.
Yeah. And when you were here last time, we figured out that you were probably a Dutch Jew, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That's kind of like
that's
an Anne Frank type of a thing.
That's wow. a very strange vision to me, a Dutch Jew.
But
you know?
There were a lot of Dutch
I
Jews.
I see like wooden shoes clacking, little pointy toes, you know?
Sounds like a stereotype to me.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, there were a lot of Jews in the Netherlands during the war and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I don't know what it's like now, but I know there's still like a big synagogue there and stuff. You know, so it's not an unusual thing. I mean, maybe you don't see a lot of Dutch Jews in the States, but they do exist.
Yes,
we seem to be everywhere, right?
That's right. Yay.
So go on.
So my show is going to be very entertaining. I plan to have celebrities, authors, just, you know, people that are very interesting, have some you know, life, mm-hmm. I don't know, some interesting stories about their life, some human interest stories.
Yes.
So I look forward to that. And as you know, my co-host kind of frightened me, so I decided to fire her before I got here.
Before you even started.
Yeah. You saw that email.
Yeah, well, you know, you're in entertainment and people are not that reliable.
I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
That's LA for you.
Yeah.
So you're going to do it on your own, but you'll have people coming in all
the
time.
I'll have guests, yeah. And for anyone that's listening, if you want to be a co-host, join the fun. You are my guest.
So you're going to there's some things that you promote and stuff, right? About abuse and things like that, right? That
yes.
we started talking about.
Yeah,
so
tell
me a little bit about that. I mean, because I'm curious. We didn't cover that much.
Yeah. I just got to take my top off and had to leave.
Yeah. I know. I still didn't forget that. Today you didn't come as revealing as last time.
That's
but
right.
Last time you had really perky boobs in mm-hmm. front of us here, mm-hmm. and I was going crazy. And, and I got
it's
a little
gift.
Glimpse. You left me with a great gift, yeah.
Something memorable.
Yeah.
But being that I was in the adult entertainment industry, my goal right now is to help other women that may have been abused or emotionally abused from that industry. And I'm kind of looking for those type of people to call in or be my guest.
Right.
Because, like I said, you know, when I did that, it was such a taboo, and it isn't now so much, but I still think there's some underlying issues that happen with girls that get in that industry, you know, why they get into
it. Really?
Yeah.
So does this mean you were abused mm-hmm. by the industry as well? You feel you were?
Not really. I mean, that's just business,
right.
But it was, like I said, my mom pushed me into it. I was kind of coerced into doing it. I didn't really want to, and my mom's
that's terrible.
My mom's idea was like, hey, you got a great body, you know, go for it. I mean, that's a good theory. I mean, really, but...
And we need to know that you were legal at the time. It's
yes,
not
I
like
was.
You were underage or anything.
Now they're going to take all the magazines back.
It's enough your mom prostitutes you.
Yeah, at least I was 18.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's a young age.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't imagine 18.
It was shocking. It was
I'm
really
sure.
shocking.
I mean, 18 is really such a young age, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you become an adult and you're on your own
just
and stuff.
Barely legal.
But you're a little kid. I mean, look at my daughter. I'm saying, if she got into... I can't even imagine.
Wouldn't you die?
I would die. She still seems like a baby to me, you know?
I know.
So at that age, your mom decided, now, what was she doing at the time? I mean, why was she so comfortable, you know, exposing you to this?
Well, unbeknownst to me, while I was in New York and she had moved down here to California, she had done the circuit of you know, topless dancing and went to Hawaii and came back to California. And, you know, so she was just very open-minded. I mean, and when I left home when I was 17 mm-hmm. and she had divorced her husband, you know, we were like this really strong Christian family. They were Sunday school teachers in my church. They were my Sunday school teachers. Yeah. And now I can move out to California. My mom's all, I greet her at the airport. She's got like fake eyelashes and all this, you know, silver lamé jacket. And
really?
I'm like, oh my God, you look like a streetwalker.
Really?
She did. I'm like, what happened to you?
Wow.
Oh my God.
How long
God.
Hadn't you seen her?
Well, she's unfortunately passed.
Another one. But before that.
Before probably a couple of years.
You were like shocked of the way she looks and the way she lives and stuff.
I mean, just a totally different person, like Sybil. Sybil goes to Hollywood.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine one day, I mean, seeing your mom after 2 years?
I know.
And she looks like a starlet or something. I don't know what the hell.
You know, as you can tell by looking at me, and if you knew my family, we look fairly young for her age, and she always looked young, too, you know, quite young. So she got away with a lot.
Really? So was she doing porn as well before you?
No,
she wasn't doing it.
But she was dancing.
Yeah, but I can push my daughter into it, but I'm not going to do it.
You're not going to go there, huh?
So she was a dancer, though. Yeah. I mean, she was sort of like in the adult industry anyway.
Oh, yeah. Same thing. Yeah. I think she worked at the Ivar Theater. If it's even still there, I have no idea.
I know there's Ivar Street on Hollywood.
Right.
Is that what
you mean? There was some kind of topless place there. Some.
I think they cleaned up the area since
then. I hope
then.
So. But, you know, even at that time, she was in her 40s, so... You know, she still looked good.
I'm sure. Wow.
She looked great. And she had all these costumes, and she was, like, very proud of it. And I'm like, this isn't something you're supposed to be proud of, Mom.
Yeah.
She's the role model here. I think I need to read our author's book here. help.
I know. And everybody probably wants to know everything. I just don't want to rehash everything we already talked about.
Right.
You know, so, I mean,
like
we talked
gonna
about...
Like they're going to remember.
Yeah. Well, go to the archives
so
and see
important.
A couple weeks ago. I know. But it's still, you know, so you mentioned it was softcore that you were doing.
Right.
So
right.
There was never any, like, intercourse.
No.
Right?
No.
No actual intercourse.
Nothing visual.
Right. But you were still exposed to that stuff. I'm sure these guys were hard and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So.
It was porno. It was just like I said before, no one saw it. You know, they couldn't catch it on the camera. So.
Yeah.
When they said simulated sex, I mean, obviously nobody's going to abide to that rule.
Exactly.
Too tempting.
Yeah. But at the time, they did have very hardcore films,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's just that she decided she's not going to push you all the way, but just a little bit.
I think she just gave me that nudge. And then, you know, after a couple glasses of wine and my first photo shoot, I was like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
It has that effect, you know.
Yeah. So did you actually enjoy it at times? I mean, you know, or is it? It's totally different doing it in front of a camera with people and stuff, right?
Right, right.
So, I mean, did you ever get to like it at all?
I enjoyed the fame because when I lived in L.A., I lived in Hollywood then, and I had so many photo shoots and magazines that people were starting to recognize me on the street.
Really?
Yeah, so that was kind of a kick, you know? And they're like, you look familiar. I'm like, you know, I didn't want to really be followed around, and I found myself with people following me home. So it was getting a little kind of creepy at that time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I was just all over the, you know, a lot of the magazines, the front cover, and so, you know, that was visible when they'd have those out on the newsstands, you know. So, it was like I was just getting that little touch of fame and did some movies. Then I got married to my first husband, who was a photographer, and he apparently, before he met me, was, I mean, hardcore photographer.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, in some court deals, and, you know, they weren't supposed to be shooting here, and so back then that was the law. There wasn't a lot going on in the valley. You would go up to San Francisco and shoot.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Come back here and sell it, you know.
So did the porn industry really start up there in the Bay Area, would you say?
I think it was, I think there was more of it going on there.
Right.
It was more open, you know.
Yeah.
Because they were just able to do that. I don't know what laws, you know, stopped us from doing that here, but.
Yeah,
you know, I was just in that beginning.
Of the world,
the valley.
Yeah, that's where it's all. You know, and there's just so much. You know, and then you. You know, but sometimes I wonder, you know, why is it that I never see porn stars on the street, you know? They look normal, you know?
They look like crap.
Yeah. Exactly,
you should see some of the girls that used to pose for Playboy, and I was in Penthouse, and, you know, they'd come to the shoot, and we'd do like a double shoot, and one photographer was shooting them, one shooting me, and I'm like, this girl's going to be in Penthouse?
Really?
I mean, she looked like crap, and by the time the makeup artist got done with her, she looked great.
Really?
You didn't even recognize this girl.
Oh my God, so now we know the secret.
They're
right?
All among
it's
us.
Always makeup.
Yes, yes, it's the makeup.
Yeah.
But I noticed out here, you know, you can go into an industrial park and you can hear what's going on.
Oh, really?
Shooting porn. What speed is that? give you an address.
It's true. They do film it there in the industrial areas and stuff.
They use those warehouses and they do pornography. And if you drive through the alley, you can hear everything.
Really?
Should scout your neighborhood drive through.
Yeah, what do you do driving in alleys?
It's a drive-by porno.
That's true, yeah. So there's a lot going on there. I wanted to what did I want to do? There's a lot of things I wanted to ask you about and stuff. But so you want to? I mean, is this going to be included in your show also to support women abused in the industry and things
absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely, right. Absolutely.
So, what does it mean to be abused by the industry? How would you describe that?
I mean, just a piece, feeling like a piece of meat.
Really,
you know?
But I mean, don't you think? I mean, obviously, they do it by choice, right? So, I mean. So
you mean the actors?
Yes, the actors.
Yeah.
So I don't see how they would feel like a piece of meat.
I don't know that they do it by choice. That's what I want to find out. I want to have people call in and talk with me about
it. Really?
Because I'm wondering, with in this era now, if it was like what happened to me, where you're just kind of broke and you needed the money, and I think that still happens.
Oh
today.
yeah, I'm sure. Oh, so that's what you mean? They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Well, you have a choice. I mean, you can always go and work at McDonald's or something.
Yeah, right.
No, that's
oh,
too
I don't
good
think
for
so.
You.
Yeah. Hey, when you look like me, you're like them. Why would you do that? Yeah. You know,
that's true.
It just points you in that direction.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I don't know. I mean, we've had porn stars here and stuff, and they seem to be so into it. You know, they really seem to like it. You know, they enjoy the sex on camera and they enjoy the fame, like you mentioned, and stuff. You know,
but it's so commercialized now, and I think that's what makes it. It's okay now. It's like it makes it okay because Vivid is down the street. It's just this huge corporation, and it wasn't like that when I was in the business. It was very hush hush, and it was shameful. It was still shameful to even say you were in Playboy or something.
Yeah,
it was very quiet. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you were a pioneer.
I was a pioneer. Sounds awful.
Yeah.
No wonder I'm a grandmother.
I know, that sounds old, man. You know, I was just
sounds
thinking.
Like a wagon behind me and some horses in front.
I know. I told my wife the other day, I said, I'm almost a friggin' grandfather, you know?
I'm
I could be a century old. Yeah.
Did you ever think of it that way? A half a century?
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I'm going to be there in a couple of years or so.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy about that, I gotta tell you. I'm starting to think 50 is not
damn
what
it.
Yes. I remember, you know what? I remember when I was young and I used to figure out I would be 40 at the year 2000, you know? And that seemed like so distant when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, the year 2000.
And people like in their 30s seemed old to me.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I wish I was in my 30s again.
And then before you know it, you're friggin' 48.
There you are.
It's 2009.
Over that hill.
Yeah, but I think we're still young. I think our generation is a lot more has a lot more spirit, you know, and we're more experimental and stuff, and we're more open, you know.
And we're much wiser.
Yeah,
now.
You know. So yeah, so we enjoy our lives, you know.
Exactly.
We don't
sit
there and just wait to die.
Exactly.
You know.
And that brings me to a point of where I came from, which was Indiana, which. You know, is a place where they basically they get their cemetery plot, and they do this like in their early 40s, and they're waiting to kick in. Must be the cold winters.
It must be.
I'm like, you're preparing for your death? Okay.
I know. Well, what else do they have to do there? Shit.
I know.
Snow all year.
Shoot some moose? I don't know.
Well, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back and we'll talk to our author. So
cool.
Stay with us.
Felt high. Sam and Susie in the morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and thanks for staying with us. We have Linda in the studio.
Hi.
And you're still back in one piece. We haven't toned you down yet.
I'm still kicking.
Yes. So we're going to call our author. Do you want to go ahead and give us the name of the title, the full title? It's Sparks and How Parents Can Help Ignite the Hidden Strengths of teenagers. And this is by Peter Benson, and we're going to call him right now find out all about this. I think it's very relevant. Right. And
I wish I had this book when my son was younger.
Yeah, I know.
We wouldn't have been estranged.
Yeah. All right, Peter Benson.
Peter Benson.
Good morning, Mr. Benson. This is Sam and Linda.
Hi.
Calling you from Los Angeles. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And we're getting some feedback.
Yeah, okay. A little echo.
Okay, there we go. This is fine.
So we're taping this, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes, we're taping.
Oh. When are you going to air it, do you think?
No. This is live. This is live. But
watch
we're
what
also
you say
taping.
There.
No, you're definitely live on the air.
I love it.
Yes. So you wrote the book Sparks, and tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you had it says you're one of the world's leading authorities on adolescence. What does that mean?
Well, that sounds a little high and mighty, doesn't it? I don't think I wrote that line.
I'm sure.
I'm a psychologist, and I have been studying young people from the ages of 10 to 24 for 30 years, mm-hmm. and I lead an organization called Search Institute in Minneapolis, whose specialty is how to help people grow successful, caring, and forward-moving teenagers. So it's my life work and the work of my organization.
Very impressive. Now, tell us a little bit, because there's so many questions to ask about teenagers, and you said to raise them in a certain way. What do you see as maybe the biggest mistake that parents make with teenagers? Is there such a thing?
Well, I think there probably is. I think the biggest mistake is the fact that parents, when young people become 12, 13, 14, if they have any conversation with their young person at all, whenever that happens, it usually tilts to being what a teenager would consider to be a negative conversation, mm-hmm. a conversation about rules, regulations, how you messed up yesterday, get going, get motivated. And so they are conversations that teenagers don't want. And it's actually a bigger issue than parents and teens. I mean, teenagers tell a lot of us who are researchers that they would love to have solid relationships, not only with parents, but with other adults like teachers, but that adults are not equipped to really see teenagers as to who they are and what they care about, and in this case, what their spark is. And so teenagers are asking for a more profound relationship with adults, but on different terms than the common one of, hey, you just messed up again, and get moving.
Right. So now, is it healthy to become a friend of your child, or do you have to set certain boundaries there? I mean, is it better if you keep a parent-child relationship?
Well, that's a great question, and I do think it is important for parent to be authority figure in a child's life. And I don't think, friend up to a point is a great thing. What my wish is that parents become authentic with their young people. That by authentic, I mean that they're comfortable telling their own story with their young person about positive steps made, mistakes made, and in this case about spark. You know, spark is the term I use to describe on behalf of all of us, adults and teenagers, that thing inside of us that gives us passion, purpose, joy, and energy. It could be music, art, could be writing, sculpting, volunteering, taking care of little kids, leading in the community. But what is it that lights our fire? And it is so critical that that conversation happen with young people, and that young people can begin to talk to their parents about, tell me what your spark was when you were 14, 15, 16 years old, Dad. What is it now when you're 45? What happened to it? Did it change? Did it mutate? Did it become something else? Did you lose it? This is the conversation teenagers are so anxious to have with parents and other adults, is about our purpose, our passion, and the positive steps we made and the mistakes we made. And I'll tell you this, the book, Sparks, is actually devoted to a great deal about how to be in conversation with teenagers about sparks, about teenager spark, about my own, how to discover it, how to put it into play, how to help each other. Here's what we're talking about then in terms of authenticity, about being real with each other in a very constructive way.
Right, right. And, you know, I just realized, you know, I have an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old, and I, you know, with my 18-year-old, it's sort of like you want to get close to them, but it's almost like they're different animals at this point.
Yeah,
how do you sort of bring yourself to an equal footing here where you can both talk at the same level?
Yeah.
It requires a lot of, like, I think, tolerance, because to me it seems, you know, you're saying they invite and they hunger for relationship with the adults, with their parents, and yet it doesn't seem like it.
Oh, it doesn't seem like it. I heard a story yesterday. Somebody said, you know, teenagers are like clamshells, and only once in a while does the shell open up. And when the shell opens up, you'd better be there. And that signal is you got to hang around your kids enough so that when those rare moments of invitation to talk with each other actually occurs. And they're not as common as you and I would like. I've got my own experiences with this.
Mine as well.
Yeah, it is being present enough to be available when the clamshell opens. But there's a section in the Sparks book about the opportunities to start the dialogue about what is your spark, what gives you joy and energy. What is it you're doing when you're the happiest and most content? Tell me about that. Well, you can't just interject that conversation as kids are scooting off to school or at 10 o'clock at night. You wait for moments, and maybe it's in a coffee shop on a Saturday morning. Maybe it's on a car trip. But you got to find and create moments when you have 10 or 15 minutes. And the conversation is, here's my favorite. I just read this great book called Spark.
I'm sure.
About what is it that gives all of us joy and energy. My spark is when I feel the best about myself in life. It's when I am doing A, B, or C. What is it? What are you doing when you have the most joy and energy in your life?
Right.
That's sort of the way the conversation is teed up. And there are, once you can get that conversation started, then what I suggest are what's the next question and the next question. And 90% of the time, if you find a quiet moment, young people will go with you into this conversation.
Right.
Then what's great is the next week you can do it again. Remember, we were talking about our sparks last week. Then here's what a parent ought to do. Ought to say to their kids sometime at a meal or somewhere else, I had a great day today. Because we hardly ever say that to our kids. I had a really great day today.
Right.
Hopefully your teenager will actually look at you and say, all right, what was it? And then that's when you can tell a story about how your spark was lit or put into play that day. But once you've started the dialogue, there are reference points you can keep going back to. It's magical, actually, but you do have to find the right moment to begin. By the way, I should say also that if for additional ideas about how to start and hold these conversations with teenagers, I'm also posting some really creative ideas on my website called ignitesparks.com. And people can also post their ideas about how to do this conversation with their kids, and so we can start to learn from each other.
Right, right. And one more thing. Obviously, to get to the point where they'll have that conversation with you, they have to trust you. I mean, it's not something that you just come out of the blue and do.
Right.
You obviously,
right.
You know, I mean, they do have to trust you, even though, let's say, you're not communicating on a regular basis. Obviously, yeah. For a teenager, like you said, they are like clamshells, and it's probably going to take a while before they'll open up.
Well, and, you know, so you've just pointed to something really significant. That is, what's the base out of which this parent-child conversation is being built? And it does help a lot if, in fact, there are some bonds that are already built and that there is a sense of safety and a sense of trust. And I think, yeah, when you have that platform, that base, it becomes a lot more effective to launch into this conversation. Good point.
Yes. Linda, any final questions for Mr. Benson?
Yes. I noticed that from what you just said that you're probably using some neuro-linguistic programming with kids, aren't you, to gain rapport with them?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
That's for another conversation altogether. Yes. Well, Mr. Benson, the book is Sparks, How Parents Can Help Ignite the... that's the ignitesparks.com that you mentioned. It's about
igniting.
And they
go to ignitesparks.com, and they can get the book at their local bookstores, at Amazon, or there's a way to order it also at ignitesparks.com.
Very good. And I highly recommend the book. I found it relevant, and I'm definitely going to finish it. I haven't had the time to finish this. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You know, anything about teenagers, I welcome, because I know that's one thing. They don't come with an owner's manual, you know, and you pretty much have to figure it out on your own. You know. Okay.
Good year to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
IgniteSparks.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Peter Benson, and we did have some calls, but I didn't know if they wanted to speak to him or whatever. So,
oops.
And there were a few
too
questions.
Late.
There.
That window's closed. We'll have to answer for him.
Yeah. So this is cool, you know, and that's what I said before. I have a date with my daughter today, and that's what we were talking about. Maybe I'll ask her about her spark.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that really, really makes you excited and passionate?
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, obviously, it's radio now.
Yeah. You know? The heck with them. It's all about me.
Exactly.
That's what sparks me, my career.
Yeah, yeah. So it would really, I mean, it's really interesting for me. I'm curious to see how much he really trusts me at this point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were always so close.
Yeah.
Always so close. So it's just the past couple of years or so that she sort of seems to be drifting away.
That's typical at that age.
Is
That's
when
my
really?
Son kind of drifted about 17 until now.
Yeah.
He's 27. That's not very helpful, is
no,
it?
No, no, it took him a while.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
I think girls are so different, you know. Mm-hmm. I think they want to warm up to their parents, and they're maternal, you know.
Yeah.
So boys are a little bit different that way. They want to go on, you know, do their own thing and come back later when they have kids. Pop up and surprise me.
Yeah.
Hey, Grandma.
I know. And for us, they're still babies, you know. I mean,
yeah.
They really are. Let's see. We do have a phone call.
Oh, great.
Good morning. You're on the air with Sam and Linda. Who's calling?
This is Corky Balcom.
Hello, Corky.
Hey, Corky.
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I just happened upon your podcast on my computer about teenagers.
Yes.
And the Spark Book?
Yes.
Yes. Well, that was very interesting, and he sounds like a great author. I have to have a little input on that.
Yes.
I have four kids. I've raised them. The youngest is 15 now, and I will say it's successful so far.
Good for you.
But the author mentioned that you can talk to your kids over coffee or on a road trip. Do you remember that part of the
yes.
interview?
Yes.
I think if you wait for that, you're going to miss it.
Really?
Yeah, most likely you're going to have your teenager want to talk to you when you're so busy.
Yeah.
You're watching the climax of your favorite show. And if you miss that opportunity, it's gone.
So you recommend actually creating that opportunity rather than waiting for
it? I think they will create it. You'd better be hearing it.
Oh, wow.
You better be willing to stop right now. My husband and I say never miss an opportunity.
Yes, yes. So you've got to be there. Yeah, you've definitely got to be there. So he did have a point, I think. And
yeah, I don't know if he was saying to create it by taking them to coffee and talking. Believe me, they're going to come to you and they're going to open that clamshell.
Yeah.
Right there, right now. You better push TiVo, stop it, put the dishes down, whatever you're doing. And speak to them.
You sound like an awesome mom.
Yeah. How many do you have? Four teenagers?
I have four. 39, 33, 18, and 15.
Wow. Yeah, so you've been doing this for a while.
Girls are cool. Been there, done that. So.
Wow. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling.
I mean, that's welcome.
Yeah, definitely enlightening, and keep listening. Thank you again.
Carry on. Your show is elegant. We love it.
Thank you.
Thank bye-bye. You. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, she wouldn't have said this if Susie was here, that's for sure.
Oh, you think it helps to not have all that porno talk, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that wasn't anything compared to Susie.
This is a different show. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break because TJ McCormick is in the studio. Woo-hoo. And he did say he was going to come in, which is amazing.
And there he
is. We had him here yesterday. So we'll take just a brief break and we'll be back right after this.
Mr. Annoying Bluetooth Headset User. most of us can't tell whether you're bellowing at a coworker or at your imaginary friend. But there's one thing we can tell: your incredibly inflated sense of self-importance.
That's right, you're the only one that matters.
When we see that stupid wireless set strapped to your head, we wish it did have a wire so we could strangle you with it and get some peace.
That would make a nice ringtone.
Oh, call someone who gives a crap.
Like some other idiot with a Bluetooth, yeah.
So the next time you're frightened by the sound of someone having a loud, one-sided conversation, don't worry. Most likely, it's an escaped mental patient. Or worse, it could be Mr. Annoying Bluetooth Headset User, a real American hero.
Mr. Annoying Bluetooth Headset User.
I really gotta get me one of those.
Okay, and that was for our guest, TJ McCormick, Mr. Bluetooth.
I
user.
Really try to keep my Bluetooth to the car only. And then it ends up stuck in my ear for a long time. But I try not to. Yesterday, I had it on, and I didn't realize it.
In Marshalls.
I was in a store and it went and I get very self-conscious. I don't want to be one of those people using the Bluetooth like that thing says out in public. I think they're really just for the car, because you do look. That goes back in the day, back in the 70s, Lily Tomlin used to do a bit about Lily Tomlin, God rest her soul. Oh, no, she's still alive.
She's still alive.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I was just making a joke. Lily Tomlin used to do a great bit about how homeless people walking around the streets talking to themselves. And she said how what she thought what a good idea would be to team them up.
Mm-hmm.
Put two crazy homeless people together and have them walk around the streets together, make it look like they're having a conversation. and it's the same thing. And now here we are. We've evolved in 20 years of technology, and now we're making...
We are talking to ourselves.
White, upper middle class people making ourselves look like
we're all schizophrenic.
Insane. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's not like it's annoying or anything. I mean, you know, you're welcome to do this, but it seems like it's like pointless to me. Yeah. I mean, why do you have this thing on your ear? It would bother the shit out of me
if
you don't have to use it. It at that time, you
right.
know, and
yeah.
I mean, somebody will go to a party and they just have it here. I mean, what's the point?
They want to look important,
no.
you know.
Yeah, it's the new important, because remember just
the pagers?
Remember a pager, or just a pager, or just the cell phone.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Used to be important.
Right.
Yeah. And
now it just pisses me off because you're ignoring me.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, I these little status symbols are getting smaller and smaller and more difficult to notice.
Like
but
private
they're
parts.
Yeah, yeah. Hello, Linda. How are you?
Hello.
Yeah.
No, but it's part of you. It's part of your anatomy now.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
It's a growth of his ear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Gotta keep up with the Joneses,
that's
you know what I mean?
It.
Yeah. So Susie's not calling. Should we try and call her?
She was asleep. She was stoned. She was smoking. I saw her pop up on Facebook.
Oh, really?
And I put in another begging session for a webcam. I really wanted her to webcam this morning.
God.
But she, whatchamacallit, she had been smoking. It says right there on her status, if you look at her Facebook page, she said she had been smoking something, some kind of leaf, root, something Australian. Something
homeopathic, right?
Something, yeah, for her back.
Yeah,
something.
And, sure.
But all I know is she was stoned from smoking something.
Really?
At about... I had just come back from running, so it was about 7:30 our time.
Okay,
so
what time is it then?
For her, it would have been 1:30 in the morning.
1:30 Saturday afternoon, whatever the frick
in
it
the
is.
Morning.
Saturday?
Yeah, next week.
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
It's something.
What have you been smoking?
It's so kind of crazy.
that Bluetooth, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's infecting my brain. Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, so she's incapacitated. I can tell you now that she said that she was going to be sleeping.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So yeah, so don't count on
So don't
on
count on Susie.
That
no.
medical
okay.
marijuana.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that medical marijuana, I have yet to see a cripple or an AIDS patient or a glaucoma. I have never. You know, I see walking into those places. I see you look like you and you and me. That's who I see walking into
and
those places.
And parking the handicapped, right?
Yeah. I see college students and young professionals walking into those joints.
We're the generation of marijuana.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like legalized pot.
But I've yet to see anybody with a friggin' seeing eye dog. I've yet to see a glaucoma patient or someone
shaved head
or
that
someone,
has cancer.
Right. I've yet to see an AIDS patient or somebody hobbled with a cane walk it up for the pain. It's all a load of shit. And I tell you what, you might as well legalize it, and for me, I'm just like, legalize it and do it or don't do it.
I mean, why not? You know, why
just
make people into criminals just because they want to get high? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like alcohol. It's even cooler. I think. It's like you go to Amsterdam and you go into these coffee shops and the people are so mellow and everything, you know. You go to the bars and it's like so crowded and noisy and people get, you know, shout and yell and shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, have you ever seen people high on pot fighting?
Never.
You know?
No.
Or getting violent? I mean, it doesn't happen.
I think the argument is there, though, that it potentially is a gateway drug. And you know.
It can be.
It can be. And I think it has a history of definitely being a gateway drug, especially when you. Now, look, not necessarily for the people who are going to go. The people who are going to go to a pot clinic, they're people. Like us, for example, age, you know, our demographic, older, younger, whatever, but not people. You're not going to find, you know, a high school kid going to the pot shop and buying pot. So it is kind of weird. I think it's a gateway drug when we're talking about 12, 13, 14-year-olds because that high, you know, is one thing. And then and it's also about who they're surrounding themselves with. And invariably, there's going to be someone there that, you know, have you ever tried OxyContin? Have you ever tried, you know, you ever tried huffing?
Well, but they would do that anyway. I mean, look, at that age.
Well, but why not eliminate that first thing, that first sitting around and boom, boom, boom. And you know, and also, I don't think.
But they can get it easier than we can. That's what I'm saying. You
true.
Know?
No, that's
so,
true, too.
So it's
true.
It's not a point of view legalizing.
It's for the old people like us.
Yeah, you know.
We have no excuse for that. We're sick.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, if anybody was discouraged by pot because it's hard to get, now they're not anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so they could still get it. I mean,
who's
you know,
profiting? The doctors are profiting from
Armenians.
Everybody is.
Armenians.
Armenians are profiting.
Hey, my friend.
Come in. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but I don't see anything wrong with it, actually. I mean, you know, if people want to get high, especially people our age, you know, we're not like street people or anything, you know, we're respectable citizens. I mean, what are you going to do in the back alleys, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
You know, and honestly, to me, if they taxed it, you know, if they were to tax it, it could be huge revenue, you know, but whatever. I just try to, you know, that's one of those things I don't really think too much about, but it is laughable to me though to look at those clinics and you know,
it is. I mean, it's a farce.
It really is goofy. You know, the procedure, right? You know, you go in and you sit down and some doctor asks you like four de rigueur questions and checks off a couple of things and writes you a friggin' prescription.
Yeah.
And he gets $100 a pop.
So really? The doctor is there on the premises.
He's a legitimate MD doctor. He's there on the premises. They make a nice little chunk of change.
Yeah, he just figured out how to make easy money.
And so between the $100 fee and the probably a couple bucks the Armenian kicks him, and then you go back. And because I read a whole article about it. Evidently, there's all different. It's like buying cigars or whatever. Evidently, there's different grades and coffee. It's like there's different regions of the world and everything from X amount an ounce to X amount an ounce.
And, you'd imagine they probably have a menu or something.
Well, they have a menu, and they also literally
that's
have
what
a menu.
They have in Amsterdam,
and they literally have a menu of baked goods because a lot they really do. They have
like edibles.
Well, no, edible pot. I mean, like they have pot brownies.
That would
cakes,
be gross.
Pot cookies. It's all there. It's pretty. It's pretty wild. Evidently,
I don't know about eating that stuff.
I don't know.
So what's going on? What are we talking
about
this morning?
Well, we've been talking about marijuana.
Oh, really? Oh, that's really.
What's wrong with this topic?
Okay.
What's wrong with this topic?
No, it's just I started talking about it. I felt like I didn't want to, you know, interrupt whatever was going on. Did we interview the Sparks guy?
Yeah, we already did before you got here.
All right. So how parents?
Very interesting, but it doesn't pertain to you, of course. You have you're going to have a baby.
I'll be having a baby.
So you've got quite a few years
ahead, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So let me tell you this from experience, okay?
Yes.
And enjoy every fucking moment.
Yes.
Because what's going to happen is eventually they become teenagers.
And they talk back.
And you go, they talk back. And not only that, but you go, how can this little kid that I've been so close with suddenly doesn't give a shit about seeing me or not?
Right, you know?
It does happen. I didn't believe it was going to happen. It happened.
I know.
I remember when my son was in kindergarten and he said, oh, say no to drugs, mommy. And I'm like, oh, thank God. And when he turned like 15, oops.
I know.
What did he end up doing?
Well, he started with pot, like they all do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I just found out, now I think he's clean, but I found out that when he was on MySpace, he was actually, you know, boasting about the fact that, you know, he'd done crack and he was with this band.
How old is he?
He's 27 now. So it took him all this time. From the time I found out, he was 17, and I said, you know, I was a single parent. I'm like, you know, okay, I got to do tough love, which isn't easy for me. But I said, you know, if you can't abide by the rules, you're going to have to move out.
Yeah.
So he chose to move out.
Well, that, you know what, that's the most. And where do you guys live? Where does he live?
Well, he's in up in Northern California near Sacramento, and I'm in Newport Beach.
You're in Newport Beach. Because, you know, last night I was watching, I don't really watch it that, I don't watch TV much very often, but I was watching Intervention.
You got to stop fucking with the mic. What's going on there?
No, because I'm not hearing myself very well.
I'm not hearing myself too well.
And I didn't know if I thought it was my microphone and not so much me.
Now you can hear, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm lowering your mic because you're so loud, but it's your headphones. Yeah.
Okay,
now you hear better, right?
I'll leave it alone then. Absolutely. Yeah, sorry.
Because it's like banging all the time.
Yeah, sorry.
you're used to that.
You know what it is? As a stand-up, you know, you're constantly, you're in control completely of your mic. You know, it's literally like,
you're in power.
Yeah. Anyway, last night I'm watching Intervention. And
it's a good show.
And it is a fascinating show. And last night was the most pathetic, to use an appropriate term, example of enabling that I had ever seen on this show. Now, you see a lot of enabling. You see a lot of people who really need Al-Anon, you know. You see a lot of that. And on this show last night, it was about a suburban couple. I think they were up the line, up like the central part of California. Oh, no, they were up in Fresno. That's where they were. They were in Fresno. And but a relatively well-to-do family. And the boy was addicted to OxyContin. And what he was doing was he was taking, they call it hillbilly heroin, because he was taking, they wouldn't just take the pain pill. They'd chop it up, freebase it, and inject it.
Really?
Chop it up.
Wow.
Melt it in a spoon and inject it, just like friggin' heroin.
Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
I mean, how fucked up do you have to be to go through that process just to feel good?
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. The sad thing, the mother of this boy, and here you go and you sit there and you say, oh, the family, oh, the family. I lost all sympathy for. I didn't lose all sympathy for this one. I shouldn't say that, because she's got her own version of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but this woman at one point in this show last night, not only did she give him $20, but she gave him $20 and drove him because he's sick. He needs it because it's an opiate. I mean, OxyContin. Right. It's like heroin. It's the same thing.
Right.
So she feels bad. She brings him
doesn't feel that bad.
To the dealer. She brings him to the dealer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my wife's sitting there. My wife says, she could be killing him right now.
Mm. She is.
She could literally, she's killing him slow, but for all she knows, this could be the hit that kills him. She could be driving him, dropping him off at his death.
Mm.
And it is amazing to think about this tango, this do-si-do of addiction that happens, you know, and to see that enabling process. And to know that there's help out there in the form of Al-Anon for parents, you know.
Right.
Did you ever go to an
Al-Anon? I went to Al-Anon.
Yeah.
Since I'm not an addict, guess what I am?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you still go from time to time?
I don't, because I don't really feel I need it, but I found that the meetings I went to were a lot of kind of bitch sessions, and some of them are really good and supportive, and others are just, you know, poor me. You know, it's their addiction of people, and so they're sitting there crying about, oh, my brother ripped me off again. Well, don't let him in.
Yeah, well, they say, you know, there's a famous saying in Al-Anon, which is, what somebody tell me one time, they say, get off the cross, somebody else needs the wood.
I love that.
Yeah, you know, and then there's the the official Al-Anon salute, which is this: they put their hand to their forehead, like, you know, that kind of thing. You know. So anyway, yeah,
it's got to be pretty difficult though, living with someone who's addicted.
Oh. You know, oh, especially a kid, especially you take your it personally son, your daughter.
Too. Yeah. You take it personally.
Oh, know? What did I do wrong? What did I go
yeah.
wrong?
And
what,
it just yeah. isn't your fault, yeah. you know?
Right, right, right.
Then you have all this guilt, and so that's what, you know, gets mm. that rolling, that enabling sure. process sure. gets that rolling.
And fear, it's all about fear, too. The fear is what really, well, the fear is what drives, really, I think.
Almost everyone.
Almost everyone yeah. on
you're
every
right.
level.
You're
know?
Right.
But anyway, so what? There's an up happy. Aren't you glad yeah, I stopped by?
Yeah.
I'm glad I came in. Yeah, I'm happy I came by. Suffering. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. It's LATalkRadio.com. Susie's not here, but I'm here to bring you down.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Who needs a downer when TJ shows up? This is not like me to talk like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's okay.
Whatever.
Tits, boop.
There you go. He was going crazy yesterday. He needed Susie on the webcam.
Yeah. Oh.
He needed it badly.
I yeah. really did, because yeah. she was there in Australia with a naked girl.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, turn on your goddamn webcam and let's go. And I couldn't understand that, why it wasn't just, you know what,
yeah,
she
I
messed
don't know
up.
What it was.
It should have, if she had her cam enabled,
exactly.
it would have just popped up on your damn thing.
Absolutely.
She was fucking with me.
Now
yeah.
you know I have to ask, what did your wife feel?
Shit, I don't care. My wife is yeah. so absolutely ridiculously cool and wonderful.
Is she
and,
cool?
And oh, she's awesome. Are you Aww. Kidding? Oh, yeah. No. She loves the she also understands it's radio, too.
Exactly.
Right.
She you
also
know, you're understands, in entertainment, yeah. you know, yeah. and yeah. I'm trying to explain that to my wife. She still tries
she's
to
She's not getting
it.
Honey, when the model put her tits in my face,
it's really
it was
not
for
my
radio.
Yes.
But,
it was
radio, just but you were taking those pictures after the show. It was for tomorrow's
yeah,
show.
For the listeners.
It's called production, sweetheart. It's called show prep. You know?
Wow.
But yeah, you know, it was just, she gets the fact that it's show business. I mean, she's
That's
watched
cool.
me for, I mean, I've stand up for, but we've been together for 11.
And you met that way,
she's,
didn't you?
Yeah,
from what I understand.
Exactly.
I
so
read
she
your bio.
Saw me on stage flirting with girls. Sure. And she's seen women flirt with me after a show, which she gets a kick at. She laughs at that.
Really?
Oh, well, yeah, well, because she knows it goes right to my ego.
Yeah.
You know, to see these women coming up to me. Because women, I mean, really, I am so absolutely average, ridiculously mm-hmm. average, you know. But
you're funny, and women love
women
funny.
Women love funny.
Yeah.
No,
and
yeah.
These
yeah.
broads would come up to me after shows. I mean,
he makes me laugh.
Yeah.
That's what I
yeah.
always hear.
Yeah.
He makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I want someone who makes me laugh.
And invariably, I would do a show. And my whole act was about Andy. Mm. It's all about
really?
My wife. Oh yeah. And women would come up to me after the show. I mean, I'd be on the other
You're
side
a
of the
smart
world.
Man.
I'd be in Las Vegas. I'd be in on a cruise ship. I mean, and I was, you know, basically no one would ever know. I mean, I could, you know, it was one of those things where I could have done whatever I want. Of course I didn't. But I mean, the thing is that, you know, these women would come up to me and say, "Are you really married?" And it's like, "What the frick? I just did a whole freaking act, you know,
did you not
I don't
hear
me? Believe. Is she really that beautiful?" And I'm like, good Lord, you know, and they really, they just, they, again, it's a combination of that and the wedding ring.
Mm.
They're freaking, you put on the wedding ring and the broods line
up. They make
up.
It worse, huh?
God
yeah.
damn it. It's amazing.
Really?
You
should have done that years ago, huh?
I
did.
Yeah.
When I got married and still, and I'm doing stand-up and I'm out there, especially when the quality of my shows, when I moved here to LA and I started, I was playing Las Vegas, I was playing Caesar's Palace and all these places and doing mm-hmm. all these big shows. The quality of the women coming on to me, again, because a combination of the show business and the wedding ring.
Right.
Because they see me as safe. Because
yeah,
they
yeah.
say I'm safe. They think I'm
yeah.
safe. I'm
and
not
you're
gonna
lovable.
Tell. I'm lovable. I'm adorable. I'm cute. I'll bang the hell out of you. I'll bang you well. I do a lot of foreplay because I feel guilty that I'm not going to do a good enough job and I'm banging you. So I do a lot of foreplay ahead of time and then a lot of spooning after because
Verbally.
I think, yeah, all
yeah.
of it, everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm the perfect package. And then I will make your breakfast because I'm half a fag. I make a hell of a friggin' omelet.
Yeah, that's what he says. Now, my question is this now. At this point in the pregnancy,
yes.
I think I asked you yesterday, I don't know, but how do you feel about having sex? I mean, do you still have
we
sex?
We have not had sex in, how pregnant is she? 8-9 months.
Really?
We haven't had pregnant. We have not had sex. Now,
no, what would you say? Was that like by design?
And
did
why?
You plan?
It was.
No,
it's all me. It's my problem.
Yeah.
Really?
But I don't blame you. You see, I mean, and it does happen.
Yeah.
But that's why I want to hear your
well,
version.
Well, my thing is at first, early on, see, because we miscarried last November,
oh,
a year
okay.
ago. So a year and change. And I, of course, was just, and listen, I know women, you know, are out, have worked in the fields and climbed trees and jumped over
squatted
and ridden horses and stuff. I know. my fear was if we have sex, I'm going to dislodge the baby. I'm going to cause a miscarriage. Okay, and that was like for the first trimester.
Polk him.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And that was the first 3 months. And then the second 3 months, it just sort of we just went into. I was sort of a medical mode in my mind. She wanted to have sex. My wife is a very amorous woman. She's very amorous and very very sexual. And she loves.
Are you sure
and
she's
she loves. And she loves to make love. And I love making love to her. And I guess it was just one of these things where. You know, and listen, and the thing is too is that over the course of our marriage, we've been married for 11 years, and we've had some intimacy issues, mainly my problems. Yeah. But it was one of these things that the beauty of it was that we went and we got saw a marriage counselor, and we fixed started the process of fixing the intimacy problems that we had again that I introduced to the relationship, and it was a result
you
of
are
these
a package.
It was a result.
But he'll make you laugh.
I'll make you laugh. But it was a result of these steps and tools that we got from this guy that we ended up getting pregnant twice in a year. You know, so I mean, so we've come a long way. In terms of the intimacy, I mean, the fact that we're having a daughter is proof positive, you know. Mm. And the idea, though, is that what I have to keep in mind, and I like being really honest on the radio.
I know,
I think that makes.
I like that.
That's why you're on radio.
I think it's
you're
the
popular.
Most compelling radio you can do is to be honest. Is that what I have to keep in mind is that this baby is not now. That's not the end game because the intimacy issues. That's what it's about intimacy. It's not about procreation. It's about being a lover. I got to the point where I leading up to getting pregnant both of these times I was praying I was praying every morning. One of the things I kept asking God was I said, look, I need to be a husband to my wife. Please, I need to be her lover as well as her protector, as well as her friend.
Right.
You know, and she needs that. And please let me.
And you need
fill
to reconcile these two things. I think. You
yes.
Know?
It's going to come back. You know, when she has the baby, right?
And that's
the
what I'm saying.
Still there.
And especially when it became pretty mechanical when you guys were trying to get pregnant too, right?
Yes, we're on the clock. We're on the thermometer.
That's going to be awful.
Actually, you know, I tell you what. I think that some guys, if they look at it and embrace it in a very guy way, because we love linear thinking. We love practical tasks, you know? Right. And so for me, I think it actually went a long way towards working on the intimacy because part of it is, too, is that, you know, when it comes to being a partner and a lover, that also means, especially when you hit 40, 35, 40, 42, 45, you are not always going to be in the mood. But if you're going to be a lover to your spouse, you've got to be ready to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Be amorous about it. Don't fake it, but also give them what they need when they need it.
Yeah.
And so for me...
I would pay to see you fake it.
I'm a hell of an actor. And so not so much just go through the motion. But anyway, so what happened was when we were trying to get pregnant both of these times, I embraced it as something that was actually a blessing for the intimacy issues because I said, well, here is something. We want to get pregnant. We want to have a baby. So I need to make love to my wife. I need to be intimate. And because it's Andy, it can't just be a mechanical thing.
Yeah.
So it was a combination of a mechanical, practical practice with while incorporating, you know, love and
emotion.
You
were playing the thermometer.
Exactly.
The vaginal thermometer.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the anal thermometer would not have gotten us pregnant.
No.
But anyway, it worked. So in other words, I think, you know, it actually was pretty cool because even though I guess the way it would backfire is if a guy feels really under pressure about performing, you know, when she gets home from work, that whole joke about, you know, like they do it in sitcoms and movies, you know, come on, let's go. I'm ovulating. It's for a guy. It's like I have a task at hand. She's gonna come home. She's gonna, you know. So I'll be ready. You know. And also, you just, you know, you masturbate less.
I see. Okay.
You pleasure yourself less.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You don't
That's
do
a great
literally.
Secret
you,
there.
Literally, you don't
there
do
you
don't
go,
don't
guys.
Do it as much. Save up. Save up your energy. And, right. I mean, that's what you do.
That's what you do.
Yeah. So because you need big loads.
More is not better.
Yeah,
in quality.
More sperm competing. Okay.
I can't wait to see which
more
sperm
swimmers.
Won. I can't wait to see which one. What's
let
my
me
baby
give you one
like.
Advice, though.
Yes.
Okay. As someone who's been in the delivery room twice.
Yes.
And videotaped as well. Okay. Not graphic or anything.
Right.
Okay. But all I can tell you is this.
Yeah.
When you're in the delivery room, do not look at where the action is.
You'll never want to go back.
You'll never want to go back.
I mean,
okay?
That's
true.
It's anything but erotic.
I have heard that, Sammy.
It's a beautiful thing. Okay, baby comes out, blah, blah, blah.
Don't want to see where it comes
from. If you don't want to ruin your sex life, don't look.
Sammy, I have heard that. We even got that from our birthing class.
Really?
The woman who instructed our birthing class at Cedars. She goes, you know, you guys think about this. This is your choice. But
do you ever want to have sex again?
It happens. And I have no intention. My wife doesn't want me down by the exploding vagina.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be by the exploding vagina. I'm going to be up by the face.
Yeah.
Making her laugh.
Help
coaching,
the
breathing, coaching. Yeah. She'll be high and she'll be, you know, because we're getting like an epidural. I think she's going to have a couple of shots of tequila and then an epidural. And,
you have a Cuervo baby.
Yeah, great for the baby.
Yeah, a little baby with a fucking sombrero. not like that. I'll be the first in Los Angeles, and about 9 of those born every 9 minutes here in Los Angeles.
Bring your pinata.
But yeah, so, you know, I tell you what, this pisses me off. You know what happened the other day?
What?
This is what pissed me off. There's a guy. Well, this has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, especially as I'm a homeowner for about a year now. I'm a half a homeowner. I'm a homeowner for about a year and a half now. And I brought this up one time when I was co-hosting with Sammy. We have in these nice environs of this part of Los Angeles in the Valley, there are just tons of transients, tons of homeless.
Yeah.
And there's not only homeless, but there's also people who supplement whatever it is they do. They're like day laborers and stuff. And they're out there and they're collecting the bottles. They're collecting a god. You remember I brought this up? Collecting a goddamn bottle. And there's a guy who what he's doing is he goes around. He collects. He just goes into the garbage because all the scrap metal.
Mm-hmm.
Although the market has now come down. Used to be, you know, they were stealing copper wire off of housing projects. Yeah. Just spools of friggin' copper. We're going to but now with the it's all down. Anyway, this guy goes around with a friggin' cart. So the other day he is rattling and rolling. It's about 6:45.
Now, like in the morning?
Early risers.
Now, the morning.
Yeah.
Now, yes, I've seen these guys.
Now,
it was
like
Sam.
Sunday mornings.
He gets up early.
I do.
Panhandling,
but on Sunday mornings, we always have these two guys with the rattling fucking carts. Go ahead.
It is so friggin' obnoxious.
It's worse than those blowers.
The thing is those blowers, they can't even start till 7. There is a rule. You cannot start any kind of work. There's blue laws.
Yeah, like 7 is late enough. You know,
7.
I mean, people are still fucking sleeping.
It's one of those things, you know, whatever. There's probably some Latino friggin' lobbying group that made sure the law.
Because
that's what a frig they represent, you know. Anyway, so first thing is first is that there are blue laws, even in California, where you cannot do construction work on a Sunday.
Right.
No, nothing can disturb the peace on a Sunday. No. And I remember one time calling the cops. And there was a guy. I was just one of those days where I said, you know what? Not today. It was a Sunday morning, and somebody was putting a new roof on his house. So he had about 50 Mexicans all over his friggin' roof with the air, with the automatic hammer, with the nail gun. I took home like that. And I called the cops, and I said, look, and when he came over, I went outside to the cop, and I said, look, I know you got bigger fish to fry. This is Los Angeles.
But this
and
is
I know,
my fish.
I know this, like, I said, this is my fish.
I'm gonna try it.
It's pretty fucking big, too.
And you know what? And the guy said, well, and any good cop will tell you, first of all, every fish is worth frying. Nothing is too small for us. Don't hesitate to call. And second of all, these guys are disturbing the peace on a Sunday morning. You are right and they are wrong. And so he went over there and told them. And I went, and before I called the cops, I said, you know, trabajo on domingo, whatever the frig it is. Goddamn America. And I'm standing there trying to communicate. So I go out to the alley. The guy's walking through, rattling and humming and humming and rattling all over the place. And again, it's 6:45 in the morning. And what I'm thinking about is, you know, in about a month, I'm going to have an infant. I'm going to have a newborn trying to sleep.
Right.
And I will be goddamn fit to be tied if some, you know, if some cucamonga, some cucaracha going to come down a friggin' alley with a rattling chain. You know, that's going to, as he wakes up my baby, I'll want to frig. So I went out there, and this is a guy that actually I have said hello to in the past. This is the other side. It's a bit of a paradox. I try to be nice. I try to swallow my pride and not be such an arrogant asshole. And I try to do what what God would do, what Jesus would do. I try to say hello to the least of us, whatever they say in the Bible.
Right.
And I try to. I try to not make someone who already feels like an outcast feel worse. So I will go out of my way to say good morning. The last time I said good morning to a guy walking up the street, and I'm not kidding you, this was about 2 months ago, and I ended up like with palpitations because I was scared out of my mind. Big guy, black guy, really weird. Actually a black guy in the valley. There's like 9 black guys in the valley. Guy comes walking up my street. This is out on the street. This isn't in the alley. This is right on my street. Comes up, and it's about 5:45 in the morning. I got a really good early Rocky Balboa start to my morning, and I'm out there running, and I say to the guy, good morning. Now, here's the thing. I kind of must have been half gazing at him for a few paces as I got to him, but I wasn't staring or checking. I just was whatever. And as I got closer, and his cart is rattling really loud, I said good morning, and the guy goes, motherfucker, you stand in me. This is what I do for a living. I knock you out. I kick you out. I'll fuck you up.
What?
I take it back.
And I'm like, oh. Like, and I said, Jesus Christ. I said, good morning. I said, fucking good morning. You know what, man? It was absolutely disgusting. Yeah. That is not what I pay goddamn property taxes for, is to be threatened by some friggin' whatever. You know, on my street. Yeah. So yesterday morning, I'm out there in the alley, and there's the guy. And again, so this is the guy that I've acknowledged, I've said good morning to, you know.
Right.
And he's out in the alley, and he's really loud. And I said, hey, I just want. And I didn't know what he could do with his cart, but this morning he was so loud. And I've got to establish a precedent because this baby's coming. And I went like this, and the guy,
they really care,
right? And you know what? And the guy turned around, and for the listeners, he waved me off. He gave me that dismissive, that
I hate that.
The hand that says, "Ah, go fuck yourself." This guy does not speak a lick of English. He's here illegally. You goddamn know that. And he's telling me, and I just cut a check for $5,000, the first half of my property taxes. Uh-huh. And he's telling me, go F yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's that sense of entitlement we've spoken about.
That we spoke about yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, is that not amazing? Is that not just disgusting? And I tell you what, and I'll wrap with this. This is my recent thing. There is a guy, and I just saw him yesterday after I left the station, on Ventura Boulevard, okay, here in this part of the valley. There is a guy who goes around. How much do you think a shopping cart costs?
Oh, I have no
buck and
idea.
A quarter.
Oh, really?
About $125, really? Even in bulk. All right, even in bulk. All right, actually, I think it's a lot when you think about it.
Yeah.
When considering how many thousands a company or a supermarket will buy, the average cost of a shopping cart is $125. So you know what? If I ever get a chance, and I will one of these days, if I get a chance, the next time I get a chance to bump into one of the city council people, and I have a shot at getting Wendy Gruhl on my show, if long as she doesn't listen to my show, she might come on. But the next, I'd like to ask one of them, say, listen, would it be okay for me to walk into Sears and leave with a TV? Well, of course not. Yeah. Okay. These guys walk. There's a guy on Ventura Boulevard with a train, of the last time I saw him, it was six. It was whatever. I forget
think
how many.
I saw him this morning on the way.
He has a train of 6 to 8 shopping carts.
I'm like, what's
tied together, and they are full of bottles and his stuff, right?
Yes.
That is whatever it was, whatever the number was that last I saw him, the last count, he had $1,000 worth of shopping carts alone.
Whoa.
Really?
$1,000 worth of shopping carts. That is grand theft. This guy is walking around the streets of Studio City, California, with $1,000 in shopping carts alone. And you guys wonder about why your eggs cost so much, for some reason this is the little mode of transportation that liberal California wants to just allow these homeless people to have, because you know what? Probably somebody like a city council person. What are we gonna do? Take it away from them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a source of income. You know, I mean, who knows? Who gives a
Can
shit?
Can you imagine?
I mean, I'm sure the supermarkets don't care. You know.
Anyway,
we have TJ and Linda in the studio. You still having fun, Linda?
I'm still having a great time.
Oh yeah, are you enjoying?
Yeah.
Okay. Very attractive lady.
Thank you. Very sweet as well.
That's why we asked her to come back.
Very sweet.
Absolutely. Okay, so we'll take a little break and we'll be back right after this.
Moviegoers have fallen in love with Marley. Now, see the sequel about the dog.
You can't keep down.
Honey, something's scratching at the door.
What? No, it can't be.
Oh, my God. It's Marley.
Marley and Me Too. Pet Sematary. The world's worst dog. Doug is back.
Aw, Marley ate the sofa and two of the kids.
Marley!
Hello, this is Borat again. When I am traveling around the world and have internet connections, I like to gently cup up my balls and listen to LA Talk Radio. It's very nice.
Free yourself away. Free yourself away. Get yourself away. Get away.
talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Previously on Sam and Susie in the Morning.
So we've been trying to get Lisa Lane for a really long time, Sam, like 3 years.
Right.
So the Argentinian Johnny Depp lookalike guy, you know, he grabs her very aggressively, you know, and she was kind of consenting just by the way she was dancing and by what she was wearing and the way she moved. But he fucking grabs her, Sam. He, first thing, like 5 minutes into knowing her, he sticks his finger up her ass.
Really?
At the club on the dance floor.
Not her ass.
It was, and then he took his finger out and he smelled it.
What? Oh. How did he get to her ass so quickly and easily?
She was wearing a dress, and he just grabbed her and he shoved it right in there, like he was testing her oil.
Through a dress, though.
Underneath the dress.
Underneath the dress?
Underneath the dress.
Wow, what did she do? What did she do? I mean, she must have jumped. No, really. I mean, fuck, you know?
Finger
up your ass out of nowhere?
How shocking. Like, imagine you're just like, you're dancing, you're drunk, you're having a good time, and all of a sudden, whoop! I was like, well, did he lick it first? You know, did he, like, lube it up? You know, or, I mean, that's just like, that's just raw, rough, you know, shockage.
Yeah. It's Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Boy, do we miss Susie.
That is assault. Did her friend
that's
go?
What I told
she
her.
Was that violated. That is like absolutely. That's ew. Finger yeah. sodomy. That's sodomy. That's it. Doesn't have to be.
It is
a penis. I mean, sodomy, right. sodomy.
But apparently, she liked it. That's the whole thing.
Who is this girl?
That's
does she have a webcam?
That's her roommate.
Is this another one with a webcam?
Oh, there you go. With the webcam.
So we were just chatting while we were on the air.
On our pee-pee break.
And Linda and I were chatting about the industry of pornography and stuff here in the Valley, you know. And, right. and I was saying, we were talking about how some of these girls are just so awfully unbalanced, and maybe, you know, because there's almost invariably there's always some
like
sort
molestation
of abuse, molestation,
yes.
absolutely,
right.
And
there
yet there are some girls that are thoroughly, completely, they're just they're at peace
Nymphs.
With what they do.
Yeah.
There's a handful of them that are just, they do what they do anyway. But the thing is that this internet thing, what has changed is how it's just, it's forever. See, I was starting to say before we went back on the air that my wife and I had a neighbor at the last apartment we rented, and this girl was a very sweet girl and really nice. She was a photographer. She was a red carpet photographer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she had a cool job, and she had done porn. She sort of mentioned
little
it one
side
time.
Job.
She had done it like
money.
She had to use a baseball terminology. She had a cup of coffee. Like if a guy makes it up to the major leagues for a little while, that means he had a cup of coffee in the big leagues and then went back down to the minor league. Uh-huh. She had a cup of coffee in
I like that.
Yeah, and she and yet you would think this girl had like a 15-year career, because if you Googled her. Her porn name,
right?
You come up with just still ages, after huh? still after still. Now there's only, she only did about maybe 10 titles, maybe 10 releases.
Yeah.
But all of the still photography that comes out of it, and some of the other stuff,
they're still making money.
It's
that,
well, not, yeah, and not only that, but it's, and the poor girl, one time somebody on the line, because they all know each other, the paparazzi, you know, mm-hmm. somebody at one of the red carpet events really thought he recognized her from something. And the poor kid, the next event, he's got these printouts of a bunch of pages he found of her on the internet, and he handed
she
them out to all
to keep
the other
quiet,
and, you know, the poor yeah. kid. And, yeah. and so it's, so that's one thing, is that I tell you, man,
because
you were talking yeah. about your career, and you know, it's interesting, because some stuff, not only can it come back to haunt you, but like, I mean, with the
away.
Internet.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
is forever.
It relives.
It
you
is
know? It's
in
like,
perpetuity.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There you sit there with your pussy spread for the whole world to see. You know, I
forever.
Mean, forever.
It
right.
will never. You yeah. could never.
But you know what really never. Concerns me is mm-hmm. girls start sending topless pictures or nude pictures mm-hmm. to their friends.
Yeah,
that's just crazy.
Through the cell phone.
Yeah,
and there's been a few cases
hello,
where
Paris
yes.
Hilton.
You know, yeah, you know,
yeah.
And yes, that lives forever too.
Oh yeah.
And these are underage girls.
Oh yeah, no. It's and you know what? And you don't want to be, you know. I listen. Yesterday, I was talking. I don't know if you heard. I was talking to my friend about on the radio about how, you know, when my baby comes, it's one thing to have the little shot where the baby's laying there on his or her stomach. But in this day and age, mm-hmm. with the internet and with whatever, I do not want any, mm-hmm. any genital. Right. There's not going to be any little bathtub shot of my little my little girl with anything right. showing.
Because it'll be all over the internet.
Well, you know, I mean, who knows if it's going to be all over the internet. But, I mean, it's like you just don't know what's going to happen. Who could, you know what I mean? A, what kind of weirdo. That. If I got forbid, I lost my camera. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's on the memory card or I lost. You know, right. who knows?
Not only that, you know, but it's really scary. And let me tell you this. After I got divorced, I was living in Vegas. My mm-hmm. ex was living here. And I would come every couple weeks and pick up my daughter. Mm-hmm. She was she had to have been about 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I'd pick her up and fly back to Vegas with, and she'd spend a week with me. Mm-hmm. And this one time, she had a rash, you know, down there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. So we called her mom, and she says, you know, do this, do that, whatever. You know, like take a urine sample, whatever. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting there with this little girl and stuff, and I'm thinking, what if I take it to the hospital and they'll think I, like, think molested you. Her or something? Mm-hmm. You know? It's like, because you can't just be comfortable with your kid. Mm-hmm.
They always, you know, look at the parents.
Yeah.
Right. They do. Especially with a potentially vindictive ex-wife. Who the frig knows? What the frig knows? Because these kids, yeah. they'll show. I'm not saying anything about your ex-wife. I'm saying right. in the big. Right. In the big picture, because mm-hmm. they've done research, or they show about how children will say that you give them a leading question, they'll go down yeah, the path you want. It. They'll go with you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, Jesus Christ, if that's not, you know, that's just hey, these kids. My wife at her dance school, you know, the little ones, you know, they love me, mm-hmm. you know, and they will come running up to me and they will sit on my lap, and I can't let them sit on my lap. Yeah, I can't. Right. Yeah. I can't. I mean, maybe I may remain standing, and maybe I give them a hug and pat them on the head, that kind of thing.
Right.
But there are no pickups and hugs. There's no sitting on my lap.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, because it just dawned on me one day. I said, you know what? I can't do this. These yeah. kids are jumping. And because, you know, and
because their parents might come after
it's
you.
And it's a, you know, and who knows? It's just a big friggin' shame. It's yeah. really, you know, it's because there's some sick bastards out
you know,
there.
You know, the guy that played the principal on Ferris Bueller's Days Off?
Yeah.
Pedophile. And yep. that, and the movie was on the other night. I'm really? Like, I can't look at it the same way I used mm-hmm. to. I just like,
yeah. Jeffrey, his name is Jeffrey, whatever his name is.
And I think he lives in Florida now.
Jeffrey Jones is his name. He might
He's live a registered yeah. pedophile.
Registered sex offender. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, and he
and
also.
And he was such a good actor. It's yeah. like.
It was. And you know, and he still acted a bit here and there. You know, yeah. liberal Hollywood, they'll do whatever right. they can to right. keep, you know, take care of their yeah. own.
Sure.
I can tell you this. When I was a substitute teacher, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, like in middle school, the girls would just come and try to hug me or something.
Oh, yeah.
I would be so fucking nervous yeah. and scared. And I would tell them, you can't do this.
Right. Yeah.
You can't right. do that. Right. You can't yeah. even touch me.
I know.
You know? Yeah.
And it's pathetic. You know, yeah. but it's because it of these pedophiles and shit.
That's
you
right.
know,
yeah.
so yeah. But we don't trust anybody.
No,
you know.
When I was a kid, anyone. Like my third grade teacher was a woman, but nevertheless, like she invited me and my friend over just to stop by after school one day and say hi. And we were so privileged, like, oh, we get to see our teacher, and she was drinking. But
oh wow,
uh oh,
that's cool.
But I mean, those were the days where you could just say, sure, you know, stop by and say hi to Mrs. So and so, mm-hmm. and you know,
it was cool.
It was okay, yeah,
yeah, it was cool.
And,
you know, And mm-hmm. And then one more thing I wanted to bring up, Linda, is TJ. You were talking about breastfeeding yesterday on
yeah.
your show.
Uh-huh.
In public. In public. Okay. What do you think about that, Linda? I mean, are you okay with
I
that?
I think it's natural. I, yeah. You know, I think long as, you know, you have a little blanket and kind of cover up and, you know.
Right.
I think that's perfectly natural. Yeah. I think it's great.
Not just, yeah, because yeah. I think when people
There's
talk about this, they're thinking of this woman just pulling out her tit.
Whipping out her boob.
To, yeah, it doesn't happen
which
that way.
Some of them do.
Some of them do.
I yeah. sit, I used to, I
But
again,
let me tell you something. Do yeah. you mind if they do? I mean, I would love it. Yeah,
well,
let me see. Let
so,
me look at that fucking tit,
sexual,
you know?
Not sexual.
It's
to
like
me
that
at all.
Other, like
okay,
the
so
birthing thing.
If it's not
thing.
Sexual, what's wrong with it?
Really?
Well, no, no, that, no. I don't. No, no. What I'm reacting
he doesn't
to that.
See
I'm
it.
Reacting to that second thing.
Okay.
You were saying, I want to see it. I don't want to see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But what gives me pause about it? It doesn't necessarily. But to me, it's it is a private, kind of a sacred thing. A mother feeding her baby is it's beautiful, it's lovely, but it's also, but you know what? So
private
is sex.
Too. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so, you know, I think
don't
there
see that either
you have
every
to
quarter.
Show, you have to show a bit of modesty, mm-hmm. and also the world. You know what? It's not all about, and I'm just using the royal you. It's not all about you.
Right.
It's not all about you. Your comfort level and your crunchy liberal family and their comfort level may be fine. You
we
know,
have to
you
respect
may
others.
You but may be the Swiss Family Robinson with your tits out and scratching your nuts left and right. But you know what? The rest of us in the civilized world would like you to throw a little blanket over your shoulder.
Yeah,
please.
But that's you again. You know, I mean, that's
no,
your
that's,
perspective.
But no, but here's
no, I mean, yeah. so this is nothing to do with you either. Right. I mean, now you're concerned with about. You.
No. There's also the appropriateteness of children being around.
That's
why would a child be corrupted by a woman breastfeeding?
Not corrupted. Then what? It's just you don't need. It is like I was saying. It is
a private thing.
Is a private sacred moment. It is not necessarily.
Yeah, but if she chooses to do it and not make it sacred, but just feed the friggin' baby,
right.
Who's hungry?
Exactly.
You know?
But now here's the thing. Now that's when we get down to this.
Then there's
is
trauma.
That, does she? No. Does she just totally pull her arm and shoulder and entire boob out and not show any discretion?
No.
Then that's the point.
Yeah.
Because no,
but how many
I have
women do that.
You know what?
There are.
I've
you know
never
what?
Seen
one.
One
is too many. I've seen more
seen
than
one.
A few, and I've seen more than a few because A, I'm an observer. I watch. My eyes are peeled.
He's
I am
visual.
Constantly looking at people. And B, I again work as spending time helping out my wife at her dance studio, which granted is a feminine environment. It's mainly 99% are women there with their children,
right.
But still. You know, there are even women who are uncomfortable. Linda said, you would like, you know, I think
you put
a blanket over.
Yeah.
So a woman
put a blanket over.
Right.
I agree.
So in other words, I think you
have
sure. Yeah. Set up a buffet. I don't care. Have get six tits out. I don't care.
Yeah.
But as long as you do it with a little bit of modesty, a little bit of decorum, that's fine.
Yeah.
My problem
but we're
is
just really uptight. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, yeah.
But the thing is we're very uptight about breasts in this country.
You know, less and less.
Just skin, Linda. Let me tell you, bury your head between them, and it's.
I'll be honest
skin.
With you. I think we need to update our thinking and our reaction on this because you know what? I don't think we're as uptight as we used to be. I think we need to sort of update the statements on America. I think
but you just proved it though. You said it's not appropriate to do that.
No,
to
I did
pull
not.
Out your boob and breastfeed in public.
No, I did not. No,
okay.
I did not.
What did you say?
I said that it's not appropriate to just pull a boob out and not show any kind of modesty at all. And it's not about the boob. It's about the act. It's about the moment. It's about what is going on. It's about the activity.
Right.
A baby nursing on a mom is not something that necessarily needs to be right there at the Sherman Oaks Galleria, you know?
Why not? That's what I don't understand.
Because it is there. You know what? If we were just to start, you know, it's almost like a gateway drug thing. If we were to just start dropping the rules, then you know what? Then people would be dropping their pants and scratching their twats and their friggin' nuts out in the middle of you know? Do you see what I'm saying? Because you know what? Because your boob could be someone else's nutsack. You know, and you know we had a problem. We were talking earlier, I think, a couple of weeks ago, whatever, with Susie, maybe, where we were talking about the people relieving themselves in public.
Right.
You know
awful.
What I mean? That is disgusting. It is absolutely vile. And some guys and some girls think it's perfectly okay, perfectly natural thing. You know, again, now
unless
maybe,
you're stuck in traffic,
but they are leaving a mess behind them, though. I mean,
exactly.
It's not the same as breastfeeding.
But breastfeeding. Look, again, it's like one person's breastfeeding is another person's indecent exposure is another person. So the idea
so who's right?
You know, I think you have to just err on the side of caution and not take it upon oneself to say I am going to take out
just
an entire tit here. I am going to show a little bit of modesty. I'm going to throw a blanket over this. I'm going to pull out just enough. I'm going to use the nursing bra and just get the nipple out and let the baby
I think 99% of the women do that. I don't think a woman who breastfeeds would necessarily be comfortable showing her boob in public.
I've seen
it
a few times,
but here's the thing. Now, do you really actually not have a problem at all with that?
None whatsoever.
It's and I just think, well, first of all, again, I think that I think the idea that America is so uptight about boobs and stuff, I think that's a slightly dated
dichotomy with all this porno.
I think it's slightly dated in terms of an assessment of America. I think over the last 15-20 years, we've definitely look after 10 o'clock. Now there's been ass nudity on, you know, NYPD Blue and some of these other shows, these other kind of racy dramas.
Yeah, but look
dramas.
At these countries that are comfortable being topless and stuff. I mean,
I lived
just
in
like,
Europe and it was quite different.
It's not they're not uptight about it, so that's why I'm making
you know what
statement
you know what
America.
Actually you know what let me take you to task on that. I think you automatically assess a certain value system when you start using terminology like uptight. I think by saying uptight, I think you royal you, not you, Sam. But I think when one uses terminology like uptight, one is assessing a value system of their own and assuming a value system of someone else. With me, with my position, I could be painted as being uptight. Meanwhile, anyone who knows me knows I am not uptight in the least.
Right.
I'm conservative. I think there's a time and place for everything. That doesn't make me uptight.
Right.
Now, some overly sensitive Baptist minister, now that might be an uptight son of a bitch. Okay? So I just think it's semantics. It's surely it is semantics, and I'm taking it to task on a bit of semantics here.
Okay,
but
so correct me. What word would you
use? I don't know.
Are we liberal about it?
No, we're not liberal about it. I don't think we're uptight about it either. I think the jury is still out. I think we're in a process of evolution on this. I think we're in a process of evolution on this. I think more and more places are becoming. I think it's also there are other social issues that are becoming more important. I think you're going to see. I think there's the cops on the beach have less. Have more important things to do. Mm-hmm. I think eventually the topless stuff on the beach, it's going to work its way here too. I mean, it's already in Miami. It's already in parts of California. It's already in parts of other parts of Florida. And it's up in Canada. You know, and so it really, it's just a matter not if but when. And it's just going to eventually happen.
I almost got arrested for wearing a G-string bathing suit in Huntington Beach.
Really? Wow.
They said, you have to cover up. I'm like, what?
How long ago was that?
Oh, this was 20 years ago.
Wow. So you were ahead of the curve.
I just wanted to get a tan, you know?
Yeah, I would have defended you.
All my friends are like, you still have a great body. I was in my 30s. I'm like, yeah, why not, you know?
Wow.
Police didn't think so.
That is very, very hot. That is very, 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 very sexy. When is the last time that you wanted to wear something like that in public?
Well, let's see. A few years ago, when I lived, the dirt. When I lived in Malibu in 2001, I would go out on the beach, and you know, I have a little cover up thing for my bathing suit. But I'd lay there, you know, with a g-string, and people were staring at me. Like you've never seen somebody's butt before.
Yeah, well
I was covered.
Maybe they haven't. Yeah,
you know? Some butts are better than see. Now, and by the way, you know, it's interesting because you know what, Sam? I have had moments where I have been uptight about it, but it's interesting is because my wife, Andy, is from England, and England is, you know, they also go away on holiday, and they're topless. I had to get used to it. When we met on the cruise ship, we go up to, there was a topless sun deck on the ships that we worked on for Carnival. And
it feels so good to
be
like
up there.
Well,
yeah, imagine how good it felt for me. We're up there. But it was tough as an American dude with his girlfriend. You're not used to having your girlfriend get a cans out for like the entire world to see. But then again, as an American dude, you're also not used to hanging out with 30 girls topless.
Yeah. Right.
And
anyway,
that's the benefit.
We got to wrap up, folks. We've running out of time, and of course, we have the Downtown Lounge coming up next. TJ McCormick, every day at noon.
Yes.
Monday through Friday.
And Linda's going to stick around.
Yes, I am.
We're going to promote her show a little bit later. We're going to talk a little
and
bit
Linda,
about it.
And Linda, tell us the name of the show again and when it's going to be on, what time slot, and when are you starting?
It's called The Greatest Gildersleeve, and I am launching on January 17th on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Okay, thanks for coming in,
Linda.
Thank you, buddy.
We'll probably have you come in again because we haven't even explored your personal sex life yet.
Oh, my gosh.
So you'll have to come back.
There's more.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh,
anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be right back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Susie in the Morning, which airs every weekday at 9 a.m. Pacific. To contact the show, please email your question or comment to sam@latalkradio.com or susie@latalkradio.com. A complete list of all past shows can be found on our archives page and on iTunes. For sponsorship or advertising information, email us at info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Susie in the Morning is a presentation of LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com. LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.